Coach, it's a bit of a sad one to start the pod this week, but just want to reflect on it a little bit before we jump into the pod. Victoria lost one of their great people and coaches this week in Mike Slusher. Mike had been around the game for a long time. Obviously, Division I basketballer, NBL, been around the VJBL, NBL 1, Siebel, everything in between. Like, he'd been around the sport for a long time. I know I first bumped into him working Basketball Victoria camps when I first came into the Basketball Victoria pathway, and just loved the opportunity to sit and chat with him at the lunch breaks or be on court with him and see how he went about teaching things as well. And, you know, the basketball stuff aside, just a genuinely cracking person. Like, always had time for everyone, always had a different thought on the game, or was always happy to give advice to someone, whether they were a part of his team or his circle or not. You know, he always gave everyone as much time as he possibly could. So to everyone that's been involved with Mike, obviously you'll feel this loss fairly heavily, and we as a sport do as well. So vale, Mike Slusher, and thank you for everything you did for the sport. And hopefully your legacy will live on for a long time to come.
Who am I kidding? I'm no farmer.
Coaches, welcome back to the Talking Split podcast once again. I am Rob Coulter, joining you from Meeting Room 5 at State Basketball Center. Nick Mihai, as always, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
The man who has made the classy move early on to put his phone on silent, I noticed, just as the intro was playing for his podcast debut, Nathan Gear. Welcome, Nath.
Thank you for having me.
Fantastic to have you in. Of course, you can follow along on the Talking Split socials. If you have any coach shout-outs, you are more than welcome to send those through. We've got a couple of topics, actually, that have come through over the last couple of weeks, which we'll cover off over the next few weeks with some various things from coaches they want to talk about as well. So we'll get into that at some point. So if there are any topics you want us to discuss, by all means, send them through. Similar, if you've got any sound grabs or anything like that you sort of feel like this would be good for other coaches to hear, you're welcome to send those through. So more than happy to hear anything from anyone in that space. If you want to, you can, of course, contact us on coaching@basketballvictoria.com.au and we'll take it all up from there. But as we are talking about the new guy, Nath Gear, welcome to the pod for the first time, obviously. Do you want to give us your background in basketball and coaching in particular to get you into this state development coach role?
For sure. Let's start back when I was a teenager. I started coaching when I was 13 at a domestic club, coaching my little brother. Like most people, you start out playing and coaching, doing a little bit of everything. From there, I kind of moved into Aussie Hoops at 18 years old. Had a couple of club director of coaching roles that kind of built some of the foundations of my coaching. Through all that, I started coaching rep at 18. Coached multiple teams, assisted a few teams through that. And at 21, I tore my ACL. So at that point...
Yeah, well, every good coaching story really starts.
Yeah,
I was really good until I tore my ACL.
I never said really good, just to make that clear.
To be fair, he didn't.
That's true. Yeah, fair call.
But yeah, I kind of had a crossroads. I was in a teaching degree. I decided to move to a Bachelor of Sports Coaching and go all in on coaching at 21. So that means I started saying yes to everything. I would coach three teams. I would do multiple jobs. Basically, yeah, anything in basketball I was doing. That's kind of how I started in BV programs. In about 2016, I got asked to, I kind of volunteered to go to the Burundara Hub. It was about a 45-minute drive for morning sessions, so it wasn't the closest one for me. Yep. But that kind of got me in the door when Zet was in charge. Then I kind of worked through some of the, I guess, different coaching roles. Eventually found myself in the basketball development manager role at McKinnon about 2019, right before COVID hit, which presented some challenges, but had some great success there with some great people. And then... yeah, I got onto some a staff under 16 boys in 2021 as a development coach. Yep. Did 1.5 years because the half year we didn't travel with Jack Fleming, unfortunately. And then, yeah, I did 2 years as an assistant with Dom. Got my first head coaching role last year with the 16 Vic Metro men.
Yep.
And then, yeah, I ended up in this. My role now is the state development coach for Metro Pathways at Basketball Victoria. And I've been here just over 5 months. So I think I'm just past probation.
Quick. Well,
yeah. I think I'm almost there.
Well, you're probation.
Makes one of you.
Yeah, exactly.
So that kind of sounds like a bit of a linear pathway. Did it feel like it at the time?
Definitely not.
Yeah.
There was a lot of no's through that, like 2015 to 2020. There was times I would apply for things and didn't get interviews, or I didn't even get a response to things. So at the time, it definitely didn't feel like it, but looking back now, it has felt linear.
Yep.
But through all of that, like even when I was progressing from development to an assistant to head coach, I knew, and the conversations I had, there was no guarantee of moving through those roles.
Yep.
And that every time I did that, it was the service of the team and then my own personal experience and reflection to continue to get better. So yeah, I kind of had no expectation and it just ended up falling that way. And then, yeah, we'll see what comes next.
I am always curious about this, and it's a piece close to my heart, obviously, because I coached under 16s. What was your first experience like as a head coach of Nationals? Like, was it what you thought it would be going into that role?
I would say I had the expectations were set clear, so I knew what the team needed to achieve and what I needed to achieve. I think some of the challenges I had, though, from it was managing a staff was something that was probably a little more unexpected.
Yep.
Just the clarity in the roles, the amount of time that needed to be invested in those relationships, because maybe you had prior relationships or maybe you didn't with some of them, so you had to kind of work to get on the same page more often. And because you're not regularly with them, you're kind of in that for a short period. That was a different kind of a challenge ahead. Yep. But 16s is an overall. The tournament's fun. The kids are really eager. They want to kind of perform and showcase, and they're still trying to like find themselves as basketballers as well. So yeah, they're pretty open to feedback throughout. So it's a lot of fun, that age group.
And it is a real strange one, I suppose, like going onto a state team staff for the first time, because all of a sudden you have resources. It's like, I'm not used to having three assistant coaches at my disposal here that I've got to find meaningful jobs for, keep developing them as I'm developing myself. Like, I know my first year of being a head coach of a state team, like, you're just trying to keep your head above water for a good chunk of it. And it's tough. Like, that's the hard part. And you had a great baptism of fire in game one last year where it certainly went down to the line.
Yeah.
And that's one of those moments where it's like, yeah, I always really wanted to do this. And then you're in it and it's like, oh, maybe, what was I doing? Like, why did I want to do this?
Why did I put myself through this? Yeah.
For sure. And you look back on that going, and every game we got a little bit better. And it was always kind of the process of that.
Yeah.
So like even the first game when we're playing Tassie and it's a possession or two and you're like a starter goes out with an injury, you then go into the game probably not expecting players to have some of those roles, and you have to manage some of those expectations or try and coach players through some stuff that they're kind of not ready for or maybe haven't had that experience yet. So it's definitely a different journey.
Yeah.
Post-national blues, it's a real thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's tough.
Did you fit? Yeah.
Yeah, hated it.
Yeah.
Like, don't talk to me on the Monday. Like, I just wanted to be shut off from everyone and everything.
Because it's such a build-up and then it just stops.
See, right? I kind of felt like I want what's next.
Yeah.
I was itchy almost. Yep. Yeah. Not so much the blue. I was kind of like, it was such a process of like this day-to-day. You have your training, you prepare, you review, you prepare for the next game. And it's like, it ends up, you win the gold and it's like, now what? How do I scratch the next itch kind of thing to compete?
Can we have state team interviews now? Like, I've got my depth chart ready for next year's. Like, it's genuinely what you go through too. Like, it is such a wild ride. And 16s is the longest prep. Like, because your prep does kind of start in roughly October the year before. Not with your team necessarily, but certainly identifying athletes. And like under 16 boys, I found the scope between what they were when you first picked them and what they end up being to be massive. And there's so many things that go into that, like just puberty in general with some of the young athletes, but just their growth, because they are like literally just empty vessels, I think, at that stage. And you're kind of giving them coaching for the first time. But it is interesting listening to you talk about that, because I think it's one of those things that had you skipped steps or had you tried to accelerate through a pathway where you kind of got everything along the way, how would you have dealt with last year in that space? And you are the sum of your experiences. Like, that's the cool part of it. And I think that's a valuable thing to hear for a lot of coaches that are trying to accelerate their time. Like, maybe accelerating is not the good thing in that space.
For sure. I definitely thought early on I probably should have had some opportunities that I didn't get. And like, when you're reflecting back on it in this moment now, you're like, everything's prepared me for what's in front and how do I continue to get better? So at the time I'm salty, I'm upset.
Yep.
But at the same time, you're kind of like, well, it's a no now, but what can I do to continue to improve to be able to make sure I have the best chance moving forward, and what can I learn from?
Yeah, cool.
Awesome.
Well, obviously, we wish you good luck this year. We'll probably speak to you again before – I would like to think we'd speak to you again before we hit July, but, you know, we'll see how this podcast goes. You know, you never really know. Yeah. But what we are jumping into this week, this is one that I was just doom scrolling through my phone. Zoe's been away for the last week or so I was just going through and deleting a whole bunch of stuff that I didn't need because I had time to do it. And one of the things that I used to use in coaching courses a lot, especially early days, was the analogy of think like a farmer. And for some reason, it just dropped out of my course curriculum as I was presenting. I don't know why it did, but I've found it again, and it's like, this is actually pretty good. Like, I really like how this relates to coaching in particular. And obviously, coaching and farming has a very close link with Ash Arnott being a fifth-generation farmer, as we are frequently reminded about from down at Arnott's Farms. But I found the article again.
And are they sponsors now? Is that why you dropped that?
No. Well, not that I know of, but no, okay. Very good radishes, in case you're wondering. So what it sort of goes through, so there are seven rules, essentially, and we're just going to unpack all seven of them and just where it sort of applies to our coaching. Where we've seen it, there's obviously some stuff that is very easy. When we talk about crops equals players. Like, that's probably the first analogy and correlation we have to make between the two. But rule number one is don't shout at the crops. So, Nath, when you hear that straight off the bat, where does that link in with basketball?
Immediately, my image is of a farmer yelling at a crop and going, just grow and get better and listen. And luckily, farmers, hopefully the crops don't actually listen. They don't have a two-way relationship, whereas players, they do. Yep. They can absorb some of that. So shouting at crops or players can have an impact on, the development and what you're trying to achieve with that athlete moving forward. My mind immediately went to the tone of your voice can dictate a lot about the urgency and the message you're trying to convey. Yep. But sometimes a raised voice doesn't necessarily mean a negative. When you hear shout, sometimes you're thinking you're shouting because it's negative. Sometimes there can be an urgency around it.
Yep.
And that can like raise some of that. First, sometimes you can lower your tone of your voice and you can kind of get the same message across in a different way.
Yep.
So it kind of comes down that path. It's like the two-way relationship with a player is really important to be able to like know that if you are raising your voice, it's because of an urgency, not a direct attack, I guess.
Yeah, the tone's a big one. And you hear coaches say it all the time, like, listen to the message, not the tone. It's like, they can't separate. Like, I don't think they can separate in that moment. Like, I remember talking to, and I won't name anyone because everyone is still involved in the sport. I remember talking to two kids we had in a state team that played for two very good coaches back at Clubland. And one had a reputation for being like, loud, out there, not volatile, but certainly emotional with how they coached. And the other one played for a coach that was just very calm and methodical, or that's how it appeared on the outside. And I'm just chatting to him. It's like, because one of them had played for both. I'm like, which one do you really like? I'm like, look, the loud, volatile one, I really like playing for. Like, I get a lot out of it, but they don't scare me. I'm like, the really quiet, calm one, they scare me. Like, and it's funny how that can come across. And the whole thing was, sometimes they say something and it's like, geez, that cuts deep. Mm. Like, it's what you've said, like, you have questioned their effort or their, or whatever it might be. Like, that one hurt, whereas the loudness didn't faze them. It's amazing how kids can read through that. Because that's, I suppose, maturity beyond their years. Like,
I think the shout as well is dependent on why you're doing it. Like recently, you know, I got a little bit upset in a game and looking
back. You are
back
coaching this year, Nick.
I am.
We have had round one.
We have. And so it.
Don't be putting your whole team on blast before we
get No, I definitely won't. I definitely won't. But like some of my shouting was frustration, like in reality. And that doesn't help support the team. And it certainly doesn't grow your crops, which are your players as well. So. I made an active effort of, unfortunately, getting a lot of stuff out with the assistant coaches, like not being negative to them, but just getting some stuff out, like, is it reality? And then coming into practice and having a bit of fun with it. Like, I step back and go, I'm not enjoying this, but I'm in control of whether I enjoy this or not as well. And, we had a really, like, I don't know what's going to happen this weekend, but we had a really productive session. Because there's when you're shouting through frustration, you hinder that environment where they can learn, make mistakes, and learn their decision making process and where they fit in the team as well. Also, their personality goes internal. Whether they're 13 years old or they're 22 years old, if I'm running up and down the court just shouting at them all the time, their personality shuts down because they're like, "Oh, the coach is speaking, so I need to be quiet." Whereas we actually got to see some characters rise and go, hey, there's some actual leaders in this group now. Like, I'm starting to see that develop in one session. So yeah, I think the frustration yelling is what you've got to check yourself on.
How do you find, like, because some feedback I got last year was around when I was calm, they couldn't understand, like, athletes couldn't understand and read me. So when I was really steady through it, they were like, what's he thinking? What's going on? Like, what's the direction? How do you find like being genuine with that tone though and controlling the message to be able to like, I guess, have the players understand it? Because, yeah, the verbal's there, but the visual's going to be there. The body language is going to be there.
So I think, it's a good question. I would still think it comes down to a little bit of tone as well. Like, I agree calming, being calm, but you still have to be clear and concise with how you project your voice as well. So it's, it's an interesting one. I don't think the yell, it's funny, right? Like they're like this generation that are kind of used to the yelling, and we're trying to move away from that a little bit as well. When they don't understand, I find it's more that they don't understand that they're the ones who have to actually make the decisions, and they're just put in that position to make those decisions. Mm. So when they're like, I don't really understand what you want, is because they go, we want the exact direction. But we don't know what's going to happen on the floor. We don't know if they're going to send you left, send you right, those sorts of things. So, yeah.
And I think it depends on when it is. Like, if it's coming when you're on the good end of a 10-0 run, they probably know what's coming. It's when it comes on the other end of it where it hasn't gone real well, you've called the timeout or whatever it is, you get that opportunity to talk to them. They probably know it's not going to be great, but they are also hoping that you come with solutions. Mm-hmm. And similar to what you're talking about, Nick, like a lot of our players do ask for solutions. And no real surprise, we're kind of going down the path of, well, you've kind of got to figure this out for yourself as well. Like, we can give you a little bit of a clue as to what's going to – and it depends on the level, I think. Now, if we're talking domestic, let them figure it out for themselves. If we're talking like the Friday night representative stuff, lead them down the path a little bit. If you're coaching state teams and above, you're probably in a position where you have to fix it. Like, that's your job. Like, we're now starting to talk into high-performing kids. So that is a different space, and I think there's a difference between correcting and criticising.
Yeah.
And that's the challenge, I think, for a lot of coaches, is that we are very critical in general because we are trying to fix things. But it doesn't need to be personal. It doesn't need to be aggressive. It doesn't need to be antagonistic. It needs to be direct. And it needs to, hey, here's where we're at. Here's where we can get to. Here's how I want you to get there. Like, they're kind of the things for me. And it's everyone will have their own demeanor. And that's like, I know when I've tried to be an overly critical coach, that has usually come from insecurity on my end, in that I'm worried that they think I don't know what I'm doing. So I've probably been more outwardly critical to try and signal, hey, here's where I want to get to. Whereas when I've felt comfortable with the players and they've felt comfortable with me, I just coach, and that's just kind of my personality that comes out. I think when you have to contrive your personality, that's when the problems start, because now you're always coaching in this disguise, it feels like. Like, does that make sense?
Yeah, you're kind of hiding behind something. Yeah, you're not quite yourself, so the genuineness isn't really there on the forefront, and it means you're probably also inconsistent with some of the behaviours.
Yeah, and that can show out. Challenging.
Yeah,
like I've spoken about it a million times. I cannot coach sitting down. Like, I've tried. Like, I've tried so many times. Same.
Yeah.
Like, and honestly, there was one game I remember it distinctly. Hands in, great. Five players walk out. I sat down on the bench, jump. Like, the ball had literally just left the ref's hands and I'm up already. And it's like, why not just stay standing up? Like, it's, you know, this kind of, like, it's just not in my personality to sit in that space. So you've got to be careful of it. But I think it's, you know, putting it into perspective for coaches, if you were a coach and you're down by 14 points at quarter time to whoever you're playing against, your boss comes out of the stands and yells at you as the coach, what's your next 10 minutes going to look like? Probably nothing good. Like, that's the reality.
Mm.
Why would our players be any different? Like, if we're saying, hey, we're not happy with where we're at, I'm going to yell at you to try and get an outcome here that I want better. Why would they sit there and say, yeah, I'm going to do this? They're playing in fear now, and that is not a healthy spot to be in. Like, you'll maybe get two possessions. Well, I'll play with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder and say, I'll show you. But then it just defaults back to what it is. So unless you're helping, what's the point?
And those sorts of yells as well, there's not a lot of constructive information where you can take on the floor and use it, right? And I'm not saying I'm a saint. I am definitely a culprit of this, where it's like, you know, effort and box outs and all that sort of stuff. But who's hurting us where? What rotation is hurting us where? Like, this is the information they need to take forward to go, what sort of action do we need to fix up? Like, that's really at the end of the day. And you can, like, raise your voice or change your tone to show a sense of urgency. But yeah, that frustration thing, I just find, because I do mic myself up for games as well. Like, a lot of times when I get to that mode, I'm not actually giving them any information, right? So like, in reflection, it's like, well, of course they don't know after they come out of the timeout, because I haven't given them anything. Like,
yep.
You know,
And that's, I think, the challenge. If you look at NBL, WNBL coaches, those environments are loud. So they have to yell. They don't have a choice. Like, if they want their players to hear them, they have to yell. But they're not yelling saying, you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, or you're not as good as I want you to be at this point. They're yelling to try and physically hear the message that's being thrown out there. And that's challenging, because there are some coaches that come across as lunatics that aren't lunatics. Yeah. They're good coaches, but it's just loud in that environment. So trying to find the balance, I think, is challenging. But that's kind of what it is. All right, rule number two, Nick. Don't blame the crops for not growing fast enough. Again, sort of crops of players.
Yeah, crops of players. So, yeah, really, really ties into what I was talking about before. Like, it comes down to a core belief of I'm going to blame something that's out of my control rather than something I can control. Just a funny moment last night at practice as well. Oh, yeah, we'll call it story time. Yeah, sure. Done. And you think it's a bit funny, but like anyway, we're at training and we spoke about two themes. These are the things that we want to focus on tonight. We built the training up to it. And then about halfway through, we're having a really good session. I walk next to my assistant coach and I go, you know what? I just realized they will do exactly what I asked them to do. If as ridiculous as that sounds, we had this theme, we showed them the theme, we built up to it, and then they did it. So if they're not doing something, like, how can I blame them when they're doing the thing that I'm asking them to do at the start? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's easy to go, come on, I'm giving you the right amount of water and stuff. These vegetables should be growing, or these crops should be growing. But at the end of the day, do you need to adjust the soil? Do you need to adjust the landscape of things? Do you need to use a different vegetable? Like, whatever, like move players in different positions, that sort of stuff, change the dynamic and change the theme of the session. Those sorts of things, like I just really believe that you're in control of it. You do dictate it. Doesn't matter how old those players are. They will just say, what do you want from us, coach? Another story time. I will do a double.
Oh, double, yeah.
It's an example of I was doing a skills workout. This was a couple of years ago with one of the Phoenix players. And it was funny. I walked in and I was like, okay, what do you want to work on? And he goes, what do you mean? And I go, well, what do you want to work on? You know, is it like jump shots? He goes, no, you're the coach. You're supposed to tell me what we're supposed to do, which was just an interesting dynamic of like, oh, yeah, I am supposed to tell you, aren't I? Like, you know, like that they will read and react to what you give them, and they will play within your parameters. You just have to be incredibly clear with what your instructions are. Yeah.
Nate, how do you exercise patience in this space? Because I think that's probably what this is talking about. It's like not everyone will grow and develop at the same rate, sure. I suppose, for lack of a better term. So how do you do that, in particular with a scope on your role at the moment, which is, you know, all of Metro, effectively?
I would actually feel the opposite to the Southeast player in that, where it's the player will move at the rate that they feel most comfortable or that they need to achieve, because it's their goals and their development and their process. So like for athletes that like I maybe see once every month or two, it's kind of like they need to own their own development and they need to be moving through that process and have a direction, and our job's to kind of keep some of that framework for it. It's very much, if we're blaming the crops, it's because it's my timeline and my direction and my choice. Mm. Whereas the player and the crops in this analogy, they need to be responsible for their own development. And it's ultimately going to be up to them what they get out of sessions and what they get out of games and how they progress forward to be able to achieve anything that they want to achieve. If they have if they have lofty goals to potentially make an Oz team or a state team, they need to have some of those behaviors to be able to achieve those things. So I think sometimes it's just got to be aligned to that, and that can kind of take some of the pressure off the coach. So if I have a domestic kid that's trying to get into a rep team, you just ask, like, speak with the kid about what are they doing to be able to achieve that and help align their kind of process for it. Are they doing enough in their trainings? Are they focused enough? Do they need to correct any of the individual stuff? I'd probably be more aligned that. Yeah.
Do we restrict that opportunity to grow more so than them owning their own development? Like, for example, we want you to work on decision-making on the wing, but we do 25 minutes of 5-on-0. Like, how do we get them to own that if we've restricted the environment as well? I just think it starts with us to create that environment for them to own it.
Yeah, and things happen at different rates. Like, we've all seen the real early developer kid that looks like they're going to play in the NBA, WNBA and under 12s, but doesn't peter out to be that for obvious reasons that everyone grows differently. Not everyone is ready at the same time, and that's the challenge. Like, there's a reason the attrition rate between under 16s and under 18s for state teams, as an example, is around about 50 to 60%.
Yeah.
Like, that's not many kids when you really put it in context, because some kids are ready earlier at the under 16 level. Other kids need time to grow into their body. In under 18s, like, I remember there was a couple of kids I cut in under 16s that I really regretted cutting, not because I thought they'd make our team that year, but because I thought they'd be long-term basketballs. And it turns out one is an NBL player at the moment, and the other one is a very good NBL one player in that sort of space. So it's, you know, is the timeline ours or is it theirs? And I don't think anyone wants to be the best version of themselves in under 16s.
Mm.
Like, they all want more. Whatever that might look like, that might be as a pro, that might just be college, you know, they just want to be a really good Monday night domestic player, whatever. But that's their timeline to work on, and that's not necessarily ours. And we put a lot of pressure on people, obviously, to be ready now. And we have to find that balancing act, I suppose, between the now player and the long-term athlete, because we can't go all now players because our long-term athlete suffers. We can't go all long-term players because, frankly, we lose. Like, you're not going to win with all the long-term kids. So you've got to try and find that balancing act with what is right for each individual player, and not everything has to be right for everyone. And, I mean, I'll actually throw this into the farming analogy rather than the coaching one. Zoe and I tried very hard to grow tomatoes this year.
Like, story time. You have to go.
Sorry, my bad. So we tried very hard to grow tomatoes this year. Anyone that has met Zoe knows she doesn't do things by halves. So rather than just being content with, look, we've probably got room for around about 10 or so tomato plants, we ended up with 60 tomato plants, which we tried to just plant in various little small gaps that we could try and find around the place. Now, that goes back to the start where we had them as seeds, literally as seeds, which we buried in the soil, and we started to get frustrated because it's been a week. Why are we not seeing seeds? Like, there's got to be, like, what's going on with this? Then all of a sudden, we went to bed one night, we woke up the next morning, and like little seed sprouts everywhere. And it's like, we were sitting there getting impatient this entire time, like, when's it going to happen, when's it going to happen, when's it going to happen? And it just happened when we weren't paying attention to it, like, literally overnight. And that kind of feels like player development at times. Like, there are kids that you don't see for a little while, they come in, they have a session, it's like, damn, where's that been? Like, what happened? Like, what has this kid done? How have they developed? Sometimes just the time is right. The environment is right for them to progress in that space. Mm-hmm. All you can kind of do is just support them for as long as you can. And again, to put it in the tomato analogy, sometimes you've got to put the stake next to the plant so that it can grow alongside the stake, and it's got that level of support there.
If you keep going down the tomatoes, did they all sprout?
That's what I was going to ask.
No. It's been a little bit of inclement weather in Melbourne this year, unfortunately. So we've had some we have a lot of, like, cherry tomato size stuff at the moment. Not the massive, like, tomatoes that I was hoping to be able to make my pizza sauce with or anything like that. But, like, you know, they're small ones. So, but we're going to take some learnings from this. And this time next year, we're not going to plant 60 plants. We might just halve that and say, well, look, we can maybe do 20. That's probably a better space for us to be, because, again, if you're trying to get 60, like, yeah, volume might be better, but will quality be any better? And that's probably a different argument again in that sort of space. So,
are you getting special soil for it? I know this isn't a gardening episode, but, like,
I feel like I'm on soil
for it. You can get special soil for it.
You can. And I can tell you now, there have been very few moments in my life that I've regretted more than when I had to fill 6 garden beds full of soil. And suddenly the tomatoes at Coles looked very good, like, in comparison to what I was going through at that point. So it is one of those things where you can't predict what's coming. Like, I think we've all got a little bit of an eye, oh, but what could this kid be in under 18s or senior bar or whatever it is? But that's their timeline. Like, we can't force that stuff. And the amount of times I think we've probably put too many expectations on people, and that, oh, but we really need them to be good for this tournament. Yeah, but is that the be all and end all? Are we going to sacrifice some of their development to get them good for that tournament? You know, maybe that's not the best thing for that kid. You know, that can change regularly. So, rule number 3, don't uproot the crops too early. Nath, what do you got for this one?
When I think about uprooting crops or moving players through things, it's providing them an opportunity or putting them into a situation that maybe they're not physically ready or, like, socially ready for. So moving up age groups or moving through divisions maybe, yep. Jumping up when the optimal challenge for them is probably a little bit lower. So yep. sometimes, like I know this has been said on a pod before, it's sometimes it's better to play in a twos team than a ones team to have more touches and more court time. Might be an example of that where yep. it's try not to move them too quickly before they had a chance to be able to flourish and put them in that kind of optimal situation for it, where it's not too easy and it's not too hard and it's just right.
Yep. That's kind of Goldilocks theory.
Yeah,
like, I mean, that's a challenge though. Like both of you guys have been involved with senior basketball, obviously. How did you find that balance between like moving players between like under 18s and youth league and the senior team? Like what did you do with that, Nate? Like, was there a sort of rule you had or anything you looked for?
We typically had progression through like practice environments more yep. so. Like we control that way we could control, I guess, what was being taught or what the situations could look like for it. When it comes to game opportunity, that's obviously a kind of a different world. We kind of just ticked off the boxes. Are they physically ready to compete against the body? So if you're a under 16 athlete, are you physically ready to go against 23-year-olds?
Yep.
Both males and females in that situation. And if you're not, then it's probably not the right situation for you because it's too far of a stretch or it's not worth the time investment because we all have limits to the amount of time that we can invest in a week. So we kind of worked down that path. Sometimes players had to get ready quicker.
Yep.
And that was something that came up where it was like an injury or two and all of a sudden someone's in that environment and it's like, how do we best help them yep. through it? And that sometimes being aligned as a program for us so that it's similar. That might be like having the same soil in different plants. You might have to move it to another garden bed.
Yep.
My analogies are terrible.
No, it's actually pretty good. Well. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Okay, I reckon you're on the money.
From one soil to another soil, mm-hmm. but it's a similar kind of situation. So that they're kind of used to it. It might just be a different location. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
I like it.
I was just going to add that I find that sometimes the crops want to be uprooted too early as well. Like yep. We have players that are just coming out of their junior career into their senior career and go, hey, I'm ready to go right now, right? And there needs to be that little bit of patience for them to grow a little bit into that role, into that senior level basketball as well. That's so to help them grow, like those conversations with the players is really important about expectations meets reality. It's more to basketball when you get to seniors than being just a skilled basketball player. There's so much more that comes into play now. Understanding the league that you're playing in, understanding what role you have, how to slowly expand your role rather than just jumping in and going for it. So that's just something I noticed as well.
It goes for coaches too.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this is not unlike what a lot of coaches, I mean, we touched on it before, Nath, obviously, like, would you be the coach you are now had you accelerated quicker? You know, maybe not. And look, you might have been, but who knows, to be perfectly honest. But we've also got to be careful that we're not rewarding the wrong thing. Mm. Like, are we rewarding the kid that is maybe physically dominant, but the skill set or the decision making isn't quite at the level that it needs to be to have success on that? And, you know, we talked about the long-term athlete development stuff already, but identifying when a player is ready. And the point you made, Nath, I thought was a really good one, the social. Like, are they ready socially to make this jump? Because nothing will turn players off than an environment that is a bad environment for them. Mm. And, you know, that gets scary quickly. And I know I've usually done it when I've coached like a first team, open door policy with the twos. Like, if you want to come and train with us, you can train with us. Like, zero issues whatsoever. And not every player takes it up, which again is fine. Like, zero issues with that. But it's amazing how many come in and fit the culture of what you have there straight away. And inherently, they're the ones that keep coming back. Whereas the ones that don't feel that, not, there's just a little bit of a disconnect for whatever reason it is, yeah. like whether they know people in the team or they don't know people in the team. There's a bit of apprehension almost in that sort of space. So it's making sure that, you know, they are ready to go at the same time because, you know, again, different timelines for different people, that's quite okay. But, you know, it is difficult to know when to promote people. And, I mean, that goes everything from are you ready for a team higher than what you're in to are you ready to go into the professional league? Like, it changes so regularly.
And they're all big jumps, right? Like, from huge. Juniors to, like, just 20s to youth league to NBL 1 to NBL, they're all massive jumps to get to each spot as well.
No, and this leads fairly well into number four, which is choose the best plants for the soil, Nick.
Yeah, right. It's a once, especially when you come to seniors. I'm going straight to the senior route. Yep. Like, I just think you want to put players in positions to succeed. Sometimes there's little guards that are shooters, and they're better off the ball. But does that help them succeed later on? Probably not. But you don't want to put them in a position to fail. as well. So trying to find that balance is what I came up with. I think that's what I've got so far. But yeah.
Well, I think part of the challenge is, are you giving the players the best opportunity to succeed?
Yeah.
And that's, in some cases, it might be change of environment, might be part of it. Like, I know I've certainly been around associations where it's like, look, this player probably needs to leave. Like, it's, and it's not in a bad way. It's like, they're too good for what we can offer. Let's send them somewhere where they can go and be better somewhere else.
Or they'll get more minutes, right? Like, yeah, they can go to another club and play in the same division, but get more minutes, and it gives them an opportunity as well.
And it might be, look, they're just the unlucky 11th mm-hmm. in your program where they should be a VC player. You know your second team's not going to play VC, but they could go over to that club over there and play VC. Let them go. Mm. Like, that's the right environment. It's the right thing to do.
I think that happened with us, didn't it, Rob?
It did.
With 2012, there was a player, like, I had a very good talented team. Yep. There was one player, I think you rang the club from memory and just said, hey, just a heads up. And we were kind of like, yeah, we know, we've got heaps of them. Like, that he's going to get way more opportunity and get success there as well.
Yep.
And it did lead to success. Like, whether it helped or not, it looked like it did, because he made state teams after that. And, you know, he had a successful career as well in college and BL1. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is just putting people in the right environment is such a massive part of what we have to do as coaches. And, I mean, creating that environment is a different argument altogether. Like, that's, you know, probably a little bit further down. But, you know, not everyone will thrive in the same conditions. And there are some players that really go searching for that autonomy and just, let me do what I do, how I do it. Others that want more direction. And I mean, that's okay. Like, that's, there's nothing wrong with it. But, you know, what suits now might not be what suits them later. Like, find the priority with that, I suppose, is difficult.
With those two different points you mentioned, direction and a little bit of freedom.
Yep.
How do you allow those, how do you successfully get those crops to grow at the same time, at the same rate, or a similar rate?
You got it,
mate. In the same environment.
I was kind of jumping around because my mind went to, like, I just picked the under 16 state team, and obviously that could be the soil, that's the environment that I have right now. So choosing the best plant to go in it, we'll have to choose multiple plants.
Yep.
I probably can't have the same of every plant within it. So if I'm choosing a team environment, it's got to be, how do I make sure they all continue to flourish together and they're not kind of like grow on top of each other?
Yep.
So that then there's issues. You can't have everyone in the same type of role. You can't have everyone in the same type of position. Can't just pick the 10, 12 prettiest, most, give you the most flowers, most tomatoes, those kind of things. You got to...
Nailing the analogy.
You got to kind
of... Yeah, he's crushing it. Yeah.
You kind of have a mix.
Oh, tomato pun.
You got to
have...
Thank you.
Yeah, that's kind of where my mind goes. So you can kind of find that. So you know your environment. When you're back in rep environments, when you're picking the 14-4 boys, what are you picking for and what's the environment that you're trying to get to?
Yep.
You train twice a week, you play about 40 games in the year, you play a couple of tournaments. You're probably trying to pick a bit more long-term, and you're trying to pick a mix of athletes and body types to be able to have some success together so they can all play different roles throughout the environment and you don't get stuck one way.
Yeah, it's a good point. Like, I really like where you've gone with that, because, I mean, the state team selections is a very contentious process. Like, you could survey 30 people and 30 people would have different ideas on what it is, and ultimately the four of you as coaching staff have got to come together and say, well, this is the direction we think we're going with. And sometimes you might leave a talented athlete out. Like, and everyone sits there and goes, my God, I can't believe you've left that kid out. They're so dominant on a Friday night. And it's like, yeah, they are. Like, you're absolutely correct. But they might not fit with what else you've got around them. And, you know, you really want the sum of the parts to be what goes forward, not just, hey, we're pinning all our hopes and dreams on one kid that might be great on a Friday night, like, for sure, not suit.
In that environment, in that soil, whereas in a different environment, they're not the same type of athlete, or maybe they're not performing in the same way.
Yep. Nick Kay comes to my mind straight away.
Yep. I feel like he'd grow in all environments.
Yeah, he does. He's not the best player going around. He just plays his role at such an elite level, which is why he has so much success at the international level.
It's funny you bring him up, because I was literally just talking about him with a coaching course I had on the weekend, and like why Nick Kay makes teams. And it's like, there is not one coach that sits there and says, oh, geez, it's a bit of high maintenance, or I don't know what I'm getting with him. You know exactly what you're getting with him every single time. He's a body on the boards every time. He will defend to his nth degree, whether it be perimeter or post. Can stick a three, can score it. Every time there's a boomer's opportunity, hand up. Plays everything. doesn't care. Why would you not want that kind of yeah. player? Especially when he can be so versatile.
I feel like I know nothing about plants, but I'm sure there'll be a plant that when planted next to someone else makes that plant get better. And that's probably
the analogy. Oh, yeah.
That's very
yeah,
good. Nice. I thought you were going with, he's a weed which can grow anywhere.
No, no, yeah. Like, I thought you were going. Yeah.
No, but you know, that's accurate. Like, I can't imagine a team that isn't better with him playing in it.
Yeah.
Like it's, and he's not the, he's going to get you 35 points on a night guy. Like, he's just the, I will get you a consistent 6 and 6 every night. Whoever I've played against will know they've played against me. You know, I'm going to do everything the right way.
We do that exercise with coaches. You know, you pick your team and we're all talking about it. And it was funny. I was talking to the coaches. I go, all of you got Nick Kay in there. And they didn't realize why. They just went, oh, yeah, he's got to be in. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he does those things where you don't even notice. Yep. Yeah.
And it's challenging because, like, and I know it's without speaking for Zoe too much, like, she's one of those people that will say, in selection meetings in particular, when a coach says, oh, there's just something about them, like, she rages. It's like, well, what? Like, tell me what it is about them. And but to be fair, there are times where it's really hard to quantify.
Mm.
So it might be as simple as, well, they just impact winning. Like, when they're on the floor, their team wins all the scrimmages. And it's not because they do anything, but they just make everyone else better. Mm. Like, and that's kind of what it comes down to. Like, some people do that. Good culture pieces, good fits. They can just chameleon themselves into whatever role you need it to be on the day. You know, those people are just so valuable.
Yeah, Joe Ingles is doing it at the moment. Udonis Haslam used to do it as well. Haslam's like, they just example, paid him just to be a good locker room guy. That's what he got paid for in those last years.
Like, yeah. Great job.
Awesome job.
Yeah, exactly right. All right, we're on to the next one. Irrigate and fertilize, Nath. So what does this look like?
Well, I think this comes down to a lot of like your drill selections and what you kind of use as your tools to be able to help your athletes and help them continue to progress or your teams get better. So making sure that like the drills and what you're giving is appropriate to those in front of you. You don't want to put the wrong fertilizer on the wrong plants kind of situation. Mm. You want to make sure if you're coaching Aussie Hoops kids that it's the right drill selection or right activities for them to be able to kind of like learn and get better and the optimal challenge point. Just like if you're going towards a senior team, what do they need in front and what do they need weekly to be able to prepare for what's in front and get them better.
Yep.
And then the second part to that is also when you get to certain environments, the game environment and the structures around what you do with it to make sure it's starting to highlight some strengths and where you want the ball to go, what types of shots you want, and then kind of like hide some of the weaknesses potentially so that they're not so forefront and they're a little more behind the thing because that's going to help everything grow better and help things continue to move, get better.
Yep, I like it. I mean, the idea of fertilizing in particular, like, that's an interesting one. Like, do we give enough praise? Like, because that might be enough at times. Like, we are so critical as coaches in general. Like, it comes from a good place. There's no problem with that. But sometimes we're not rewarding of the good behaviors because it's just expected.
Mm.
But are we highlighting that? And if we're not highlighting that, how quickly does that go away? So it's knowing when and how much, because you can also drown plants and you can drown players effectively by giving them too much of the wrong thing. Mm. Like, if all you ever do is praise, like, how does that player ever know? And if all you ever do is criticize, how does that player ever know? So you've got to try and find the balance, not necessarily of criticizing, but certainly correcting where you need to correct as well. And that's, I suppose, part of the challenge.
Yeah, I think it's just honest feedback rather than being positive or checking whether you're negative. Just be honest and build the relationship. That helps the crops grow. I agree with everything Nathan said as well. Like, it's right environment for the right crops, right? It's, you know, the junior level. I've seen domestic walking around where some coaches are running Princeton offenses in under 14s. And for those that don't know, it's a very complicated offense that takes years and years and years to develop over time. I do not recommend you doing it at all for domestic. Right, that's so, like, choosing the right environment for your crops will allow them to grow at any level.
Do you always think honest feedback or direct feedback in that is appropriate for every stage through? Because if I have a 9-year-old in domestic environment, how honest do I need the feedback to be versus a 15-year-old in a state performance environment?
I'll go first. I think it does need to be honest. I just think it needs to be less direct or make it seem harsh, like help them understand, like if it's a walkthrough of something. But we're talking more practice. If those juniors, if it's in the game, it would be more positivity of just try something and learn what decision making is. Yeah.
It's, I'm the same. Honesty is fine, but how you package it is the real challenge. So I find with younger kids in particular, they are able to visualize analogies really well, whereas the older kids don't necessarily need it. They can hear the information and go and apply it. And it's amazing how many people ask for really honest, critical feedback, get it and go, geez, that was a bit harsh. And it's like, well, no, this is what you asked for. Like, we're trying to give it to you so that it helps in that environment. Whereas the young kids, like I was working with a kid the other day, I'm like, oh, where are you from? He said, oh, Warrnambool. I'm like, all right, cool, no worries. I'm like, well, if you're going to Melbourne, like imagine where you're standing at the moment is Warrnambool and the basket is Melbourne. You drove all the way around the quay. Like, so you went to Mildura before coming back to Melbourne. Like, you're miles away, and you could sort of see the cogs turning in her head. She's like, oh, okay, I get what you're saying now. Like, I need to be more direct with where I'm going. Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Now, I could have absolutely gone the throat straight away and said, oh, you need to be doing this. But does that hit the same way? But it's that opportunity, I think, to build a little bit of a relationship and have some fun with it.
Kind of lets them pull it out of the feedback as well.
Mm. Like, it's, you know, I think, because I've done it a lot with young kids, it's like, okay, rate that shot you just took on 1 to 10. And if it goes in, they usually, oh, it was 10 for sure. And it's like, okay, really think about this. Mm. Like, was that a 10? Or are you just talking about the fact that it went in? So you tell me what you would rank that. Oh, you know, maybe about a 6. It's like, okay, cool. If that's where you're at, no worries. Did you see that player over there that was open? No, I didn't. Okay. Did you see the hand in your face when you shot it? No, I didn't. Okay. Did you see the driving lane instead of the shooting lane that you took? No, I didn't. Okay. So we're starting to come down the rankings a little bit here. So it's that having to unpack it with them. Mm-hmm. And look, I'll be completely honest. Is that the most efficient way of teaching? Probably not. Because I think as coaches, we'd all like to sit there and say, hey, that's not the right shot.
Mm-hmm.
But does that get the player better? How does that make the player feel? Does the player now understand? Like, there's a lot of stuff that comes within that where brutal honesty might be the preferred way, but does it hit? That's my concern.
We can't continue. If it only happens once or in that moment, it's not going to be able to be recalled and you're not going to be able to continue to get better. So I think, the packaging it and allowing them to pull some of that from it is definitely a repeatable way for them to be able to at least apply it to other environments as well.
Yeah.
Well, it helps them understand why as well. Like, they pull the information out, they understand, and they can draw a bit of a picture in their head. Whereas if you just tell them, go do this, you need to drive this way, they don't understand why they're doing something either.
Yeah. And I think anytime we're talking feedback as an example, like, we'll go with that pun. There's a reason I always try and get the players to lead that conversation rather than just me hitting them with feedback. So it's like, hey, can I have some feedback? All right, no worries. You let me know how you think you went. Like, and now I can get a little bit of a gauge. Now, if they're overtly critical on themselves, well, now I sit there and it's like, well, okay, one, they can probably take a little bit more constructive feedback in that space, but maybe they've identified everything I've kind of felt like anyway. I don't need to be overly critical of them. I can now sit there and say, well, okay, that's a valid point. No worries, let's move on from that. Or that's a valid point. Here's how I would address it. But here's some positives to go away with as well. Like, that way you can kind of get the temperature check and look, are they ready for more or are they really just hitting on the superficial stuff? And it's like, well, how did you think you went? I could have rebounded more, you know, I could have boxed out. And it's like, yeah, this is all the stuff we all say. Like, you know, that would appear on everyone's feedback form, I would suggest. So
you work on a non-dominant hand.
Yeah, like, oh, okay, yeah, cool. Like,
dribble with eyes up.
But in all honesty, that's what it is. Like, it's, you know, we just went through the under-16 combine like you spoke about. Like, in all honesty, I know there was a player, and I won't say if it was boys or girls because I watched both on the day, but there was a player that could not make a pass with their non-dominant hand.
Mm.
Like, and that matters.
There was many.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, to be fair, they had some friends. Like, there was a few on the day, and it is certainly something I think we're going to have to address, but the amount of times it's like, well, that might be the difference between you making a team and missing a team at that level, like where there are other really talented kids. Now, again, you might get away with that on a Friday night because you can. Like, the players you're playing against may not be at the same level that you were just at with combine. But if you can't, in particular, if you're in one of those guard spots, if you can't make a pass to the left with your left hand, you're going to really struggle. Like, if it has to always be across the body, that's an issue for it. So when we talk about, you know, how much can they take, yeah, that's a challenge. And I think everyone will be a little bit different on that one. But speaking of different, remove the weeds, Nick. What does this look like?
It does resonate with me. It comes back to Mel Downer's quote, which I've quoted before. You can pass on good players. You can't pass on good people. I just think like someone with an attitude of that's disruptive in your group, it's just always going to hold the crops back. You know, the weeds will just be, you can water them, but if the weeds are there absorbing all the water, they're not going to grow as fast as the, as you want. So yeah, I'm not suggesting that you remove players from your domestic program. So I think it is obviously relevant to more seniors, yeah, probably, I would say. I appreciate
you making that qualifying point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. You know, but yeah, for at the senior level, like, yeah, you just remove them. Like, and it's not necessarily that they're weeds. It's maybe that they're growing at different levels as well. So like for us, we pick 12 players every week, and that's really difficult. There's a lot of players that are going to miss out. There's going to be a lot of players that miss out this week as well. But, you know, it's more what environment is most comfortable with the group that we're taking rather than you're not up to this sort of thing. Because if we're coming in with you're not up to this and we're just going to go with this group as well, like you can start to create some weeds which you'll need to uproot later if you've created that further on.
Well, my mind goes to also, you don't necessarily have to remove weeds, but you can kind of invest in some behaviors to like mitigate the growth or like how they affect others within it.
Yeah.
So it's like if you do have someone that maybe is a little more negative, what behaviors do you have in your team or within the environment that you can kind of do to kind of help in a session or help in a game to kind of mitigate some of that. Mm. And that's kind of like trimming the weeds kind of, if you do it daily, I'm sure they don't grow as quick and they don't affect your plants.
Mm.
You don't necessarily have to remove the whole thing out.
Yep.
So that's kind of where my mind went. I don't know if you guys have strategies for...
Well, I mean, one of the things I'm kind of curious on, like you got to set your standards early. I mean, that's part of it. And yes, I think you as the coach can facilitate that, but they have to be your player's standards. Like they have to live and breathe it every day. And there's probably some standards for you as a coach that I think you'll probably have to live and breathe as a part of that. But you do have to set the standards early and reinforce them when you need to reinforce them. It's like, hey, this is not the standard we set, and address it from there. One of the queries I have is how quickly do you have to jump on a problem? Like, because realistically, we know there's going to be weeds in every garden.
Yeah.
We know there are going to be, and I won't say problems, but, you know, in inverted commas, problems in every team that's not going to go smoothly. How proactive do you have to be with that? Like if you have a player that has a bit of a reputation of being a little bit of a hothead, for example, do you address that before you've even coached that player and jump in, or do you wait for that behavior to show and then you address it?
I create the environment so it doesn't have a chance to grow, but I'm still having touch points to have conversations before it's happening. I think once it becomes a problem, you have to jump on it straight away because you haven't done stuff beforehand to create that space. I'm on it pretty regular.
What do you say if it doesn't, like if the group's strong enough or it's separate or the weed is kind of separate from the plant, even though you're in the same soil, do you need to jump on it as quick if it's not affecting others within that?
True, yeah. Yeah, I guess if the plants are strong enough and there's some...
if you've done the job and set the standards and...
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point.
It's a tough one.
Yeah, no, yeah.
And that's... My other challenge on that would be, because I think you make a good point there, like if it's not affecting anyone else, does it matter as much?
Mm.
It may not be affecting anyone else, but it might be affecting that player.
That, yeah.
Because now there's a reputation that can come with that, unfortunately, whether it's fair or not. Some players are perceived to be high maintenance than others. And, I mean, that goes all the way through to the pro level. Like that's not just junior basketball. Like some players have that reputation that you don't want them on your team. And, you know, regularly that's unfair. Like maybe the environment they were in at that time didn't allow them to be the best version of themselves. So I am a believer in jump on problems quickly because small problems very much end up like rolling snowballs and all of a sudden you've got an avalanche. And it was something we were talking about just the other day, like one happy person creates two happy people, but one disappointed person creates seven disappointed people.
Mm.
And that's where you've got to be really careful in particular that environment that if you do see a problem, address it. Like, problems that go away by themselves come back by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so for mine, I would try and address it. And I would try and address it as informally as possible rather than making a massive deal out of something that maybe isn't that massive a deal. Like, what would you do, Nathan? I'm curious.
No, I'm with you on that. I keep thinking about sometimes I know very little about farming and gardening. Sometimes I can't tell a weed from a plant.
Yep.
Valid. Yeah.
So, and at what point, how do I identify a weed? So how do I identify problems that maybe are like first things that come up? Like how would I identify something that needs to be addressed first?
Yep.
Not addressed in that situation. So,
or who it is.
Yeah, or who yeah. it might be, or who the problem is, particularly in some environments where you don't know everything that's being said behind other conversations or closed doors or through some of their social media chats that I know some players have. So it's like, how do you identify who's actually the weed within that?
Yeah, I think it needs to be an overall thing. Like there's examples are if I think certain players aren't moving the ball, for example, or not throwing to certain players, our theme at the start of the session would be what we're going to focus on offensively is if there's a second or third defender, you're going to pass to the open player. Yep. And that's what I'm just going to coach tonight and just focus on that theme where I'm not calling a player out or not calling someone a weed and turning them into a weed. Yep. They're staying a crop, right, by making it a group decision to move forward this way.
Sounds overtly harsh, us calling players weeds, and I do understand that. But again, it's the analogy we're working with in this space. But I mean, you see it in school environments too. There are teachers that don't allow two students to sit next to each other because when they do, it's chaos.
Mm.
You know, neither of them will do any work. But when you separate them, they both work fine independently of each other. Mm. Like some people just aren't good meshes in that space. And like I know I've certainly done it with like team managers. As an example, like it's okay, team's picked. I need a team manager. One parent puts their hand up and it's like, oh, no, like we're not going to get along over this year. You're probably not the person I want in this sort of space. So for me, it's just like, well, can we change that environment just to make sure that this isn't going to be conflict later on and it's still going to be a fairly tangible, you know, process moving forward? But, you know, the weed thing is, it's inevitable, but it's going to be in every garden. Like everyone's garden will have weeds, everyone's team will have problems of various capabilities. It's honestly, it is your job to try and fix that as best you possibly can or put enough preventative stuff around it so that it's not an issue. Like, yes, you could go in and just walk in with poison and kill the weeds, but, you know, is that really what we want to be doing with our players? No. Like, we want to try and find ways to make them better people moving forward as well, and they may not realise they are that until it's pointed out to them.
And 90% of those weeds really come from minutes. Let's face it. Like that's where it comes from. Exercise. I think Darren mentioned it on the pod a long time ago. But like something that I've done at the start of the year is I would get the players in and I would say write down what you think your minutes are this year, and they would write it down. It was always over by like 80 minutes when you add them all together.
Yep.
It's like, okay, so now you know what a coach has to deal with. Right, like, because we don't do equal minutes. Like, I generally had the first teams at that stage as well. So, like, I wasn't going to do even minutes, and we're not expected to do even minutes. So, you have to understand that, you know, you can say, hey, I reckon I should be 20 minutes, but it doesn't add up. So, just giving them a perspective, like, in my shoes helped the situation a little bit as well. But it's still, you still got to be on top of it, right? Like, when guys don't play, you've got to, instead of waiting for it to escalate, hey, let's have a chat next week. I won't chat tonight. Let's chat next Tuesday at practice, just before practice.
Yep. Like it. Last one, Nath. You can't control the weather.
Yeah, you can only prepare for it.
Yep.
The idea of you can prepare for a sunny day, put sunscreen, put a hat on. The idea, if it's going to be a rainy day, prepare with a raincoat, umbrella. Yep. You're going to have good seasons. You're going to have bad seasons. The idea is you prepare properly and then you go through that, the storm or that experience, and then you come out the other side going, what have we learned? What have we reflected on? Did I need to do things differently? Maybe I forgot the umbrella.
Yep.
And I'm sure it's similar for when you're farming. You can't control the weather, but you're going to show up every day and you're going to kind of be there and you're going to be present and you're going to make sure you're doing the right things for your crops.
Yeah. And you hit the nail on the head there, I think. Like, you can prepare for it. Like, you might use, you know, like a greenhouse or something. Like, if you know there's going to be inclement weather, can you put shade up around? Those sorts of things. Like, if you know at some point one of your players is going to go overseas for 4 weeks and that's your best point guard, like, can you find a way to get minutes into your other point guard that is going to have to play that role when that time potentially comes in there as well? Like, there are tons of things in the sport that we can't control, like injuries being one, like workload potentially, but, you know, injuries just happen. Like, we can't really do much about that. Referees, they are what they are. Like, it's, you know, we're not really impacting in that sort of space. We can't control what the other team does. Oh, this team presses us all the time. All right. What do you want to do? Like, if you know it's coming, you've got two options. You can bitch about it, or you can sit there and say, well, okay, we're going to need to address some things, whether it be a skill set, whether it be a system, whatever it else is, and just the basketball gods in general. Mm. Like, sometimes it just doesn't work.
That's the one I was going to bring up. Like, I saw it more as like game specific, where you prepare for the weather environments. Let's say it's going to be a sunny day and it starts to rain, is equivalent to a player who shoots 8% from the 3-point line, and then you scout to go under and they whack 5 threes in the first half. And you've got to adjust to the weather now. Do you have to cover that area of the crop so it's not getting too much water and be able to work through that? Like, they're the adjustments you have to make. Like, you can't control that part, but you can control how you react to it.
Yep. And that's probably, I think, the reaction is what I'm keen to have a look at there is when something goes wrong, what's my reaction as the coach? And if my reaction is toys out of the cot, you know, stamp your feet on the sidelines, well, that's probably not going to be helpful, and it's probably going to be mimicked behaviour from your players that are now going to say, well, if that's acceptable for them, it's acceptable for me as a player. Mm-hmm. So, yes, you can't control everything, but, again, what you can do is lead in that space. What you can do is be the right example for your players in that space. Like, am I a steadying focus for my players, or am I erratic and out of control? And not necessarily a time and a place for both, because I'd suggest probably erratic and out of control doesn't usually work. But, you know, there might be times where you do have to be more energetic and you do have to try and generate something to get people following you in the right direction as well. And that's, you know, control the stuff you can control. Mm. And the stuff you can usually control is player development. Now, can you control the timeline of that? No. Can you control when players develop? And, like, we sort of go back to the old green banana analogy from, like, Chris Vanderhagen. Like, it's, you know, yes, there will be green bananas, yes, there will be brown bananas, but, you know, looking at those at players, the green ones will just be ready later. The brown ones are great for use now. The yellow ones, who knows? That could be anywhere in that sort of space. And that's where I kind of feel like control what we can control as coaches.
The control, the controllables. I know with university, we spoke about a play-present mindset. Yep. So always play what's in front of you. So when something does happen, you see a press, you see a missed shot, it's always on to what's next, because that's the moment done. We got to control what we can moving forward.
Yeah, what's next is such a hard mentality for players to grasp, I find, at times, because they get so hung up on, oh, I've made a mistake, and then they just dwell, and it's like, no, now you're just running in quicksand.
I think, like, equally coaches as well, for sure. If you're not checking for it. Like, you're always looking back in the past with, like, a missed box out or something like that.
The missed layup, the timeout, and you're talking two possessions earlier about what happened rather than what's coming forward or what can we adjust to be able to address.
Yeah, there's a lot of emotional control that goes with that. Like, and that's the hard one, because our reaction is our reaction, and whether we notice it or not, and you can get into the whole, like, micro emotions and all those sorts of things as well, which is a totally different topic. But, you know, players will pick up on your body language, they'll pick up on your tone of voice, they'll pick up on your mannerisms, they'll pick up when you're engaged, they'll pick up when you're disengaged. Like, that's one that I think they notice straight away, which does lead us into our social split talk for the week.
Something to post on Facebook. Let's go.
It's like me on Twitter.
So I was trying to find, like, a farming quote that applied to sport, and I found one. I don't actually know who it is that's talking on this one, but, you know, I like the message regardless on this, and we'll see how it sort of shakes out.
A farmer who plants today does not eat tomorrow. But if he abandons his farm because he is hungry, he will remain hungry forever. That is the wisdom of hard work. Your season is coming, but you must first endure the silence, the doubt, the mockery. Nobody claps for the seed in the soil. No, my friend. They only clap when the harvest comes. That is why you must not quit now. Because if you do, you will never taste the fruit of your labor.
That was one I found a little bit hard to hear at times, obviously, with the music over the top. But the crux of the message is show up and work. Like, and that's honestly most of what coaching is. Like, there are going to be some rough times, there are going to be some really good times, but embrace the really rough times and you'll enjoy the really good times a lot better. And it is literally in that development space in particular. Like, when you first plant the seed, when you first coach the player, it may not be great. Like, but will it get any better if you just walk away and say, nah, this isn't working? Probably not.
Yeah, applaud it, celebrate at the end. It kind of ties into what you were talking about before, where it's, you know, not to be, to go too quick and go, oh, the crops aren't growing. Yeah. Like, he's like, do the hard work, you know, water the soil and put the fertilizer in and all that sort of stuff, and then reap your rewards at the end of it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's part of it. Like, I heard someone say, it was on a podcast ages ago, like, you know, what do you tell people that are going through tough times? And they're like, well, keep going. Mm. Like, don't stop and stay there and, you know, be mired in disappointment and failure and all that sort of stuff. Well, keep going. Like, that's kind of the crux of what it is. Like, you don't get any better by just sitting there and moping. You get better by finding a way forward and navigating forward. And sometimes it might mean you have to go back a little bit to go forwards. And that's kind of what coaching is. Like, let's face it, we've all been in positions where we sit there and it's like, hey, we've turned the corner as a team. and you look up the scoreboard, it's like, oh, no, we haven't. Like, this has gone poor. Like, it happens, I think, as coaches. And this is where, like, the analogy, I think, between the farming and the coaching really sort of hits for mine. And, you know, our job, I suppose, as a coach isn't to force growth. Like, people will grow at different rates and speeds and to levels and all that sort of stuff. Our job is to create the environment so that people can grow. And people being our players, we've just got to be patient. And sometimes we don't want to hear that, but we don't have much of a choice.
Kind of have to be patient, consistent, and show up daily and keep moving forward. That's my mind in farmers is they show up every day.
Yeah.
And they enjoy the process of showing up at whatever time in the morning they have to get up to go do their job. So.
And we appreciate them for it. Shelves are stocked when the farmers are doing what they're supposed to be doing. So I do very much appreciate
especially
that.
After your tomato learnings.
Yeah, well, exactly right. Oh, man, we have bought some cans of tomatoes this last couple of months that I didn't think we were going to have to do, but that's all right. But it is one of those things. Like, coaches, hopefully you got something out of this. We just asked talking about weeds, crops, and soil and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, there's some gardening stuff in there, I'm sure. But, you know, apply to your coaching in particular. You can, honestly, if you just Google, like, think like a farmer, online, you'll be able to see all the article and those sorts of things as well. So, you know, by all means, go and have a little bit of a look because other people have written articles on this, which you can probably take some other things from as well. So, Nate, congrats on the debut.
Thank you.
Got through with flying colours. We haven't had to edit you out or anything like that. Like, it's you will absolutely get a week to return.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Nick,
looking forward to it.
Congratulations. The probation continues. Coaches, yes. We will catch everyone again next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.